Good morning. One of the benefits of getting older in the church is that when Brian comes to you and says, guess what, you're preaching on Sunday, you have a long list of previous sermons in your Google Drive that you can go to find something to preach. So the lesson that I'm going to preach this morning may be familiar to some of you. It's been a while since I've preached it. But, you know, I'm always a little uncomfortable. And the class was really good this morning, and I thank everyone who had really good comments and helped out in the adult class. I'm always a little uncomfortable with things that are, remote or impractical when it comes to the stuff that I am presenting. And the Essenes and the Gnostics are not terribly practical. I mean, it's kind of good to understand what was going on there. We definitely want to know so that we can resist. But, you know, I don't have a lot of Gnostics knocking on my door every Sunday asking me if I want to talk to them about their their doctrine or what have you. But this morning, what I want to talk to you about for just a few minutes is something that is absolutely extremely useful to each of us as we try to serve God, and that's the idea of managing conflict. And one thing that, and I used to find a lot more of this, for some reason, I don't know if I'm not going to the same places on the internet or what have you, but I used to see a lot of things that were like, advice type, especially professional type advice. And I was always struck when it fit exactly with what God had to say. And this is one of those things this morning. But one thing I want to say in the intro that I did not say, I'm fairly certain when I preached this 4.5 years ago, this isn't a lesson that I feel like we need because we have a big problem with it. It's a lesson that we need because it's something that happens to us every day and we need to be reminded of it. You know, sometimes Paul, when he would write, he would praise the people that he was writing to. He goes, I don't even need to write to you about this, but I want you to know what it is that, and I believe that when I talk about managing conflict, which is our topic for this morning, we're extremely blessed right now in this place to have a lot of peace and unity, and I am very grateful for that. I'm grateful for you all, for the self-control that you have, for the love that we have for one another, and the fact that we don't have division and strife and bickering and petty backbiting and those things in this place. I'm very grateful for those things. But it doesn't hurt to be reminded still of what it is that God has for us. And the thing is, to me, this is a place where we really have an opportunity to shine our lights before men. And I suspect from my own life that many of you have had someone who is worldly say something to you about the way that you manage conflict. If you think back in your life, I bet someone has told you something about that in your past that has struck them about the way that you handled the situation. You may not even remember it now, but I would be willing to bet that most, if not all of you, have at some, especially those of you who are starting to get older like me, somebody has been struck by the way that you handled something because you were doing it in the way that Christ wanted it done. That is a way that we can shine our lights before men. When we have a conflict and we handle it in a Christ-like fashion, that's something that strikes people, that impresses people. It's a way that we can hopefully reach people. You know, the little vignette that I have at the beginning, and it's one that's always amused me. When I was really young, I loved Dr. Seuss. And I looked forward to having kids that I could read Dr. Seuss to, and neither of my kids particularly cared for Dr. Seuss. I mean, they were fine with it. It wasn't like they were like striking the book out of my hand, but they never said, Daddy, read this Dr. Seuss to us. And, you know, so that's just the way it goes. But I believe it's in the Sneetches and other stories. There's the Sneetches, and then there's two or three other little stories in there. I think that's the one where Dr. Seuss writes about the Zacks, and it's only like maybe 10 pages long. It's a very short little story. And some of you may remember it, those of you who have read it to your children. If you don't know it, it's very simple. In the Prairie of Prax, there was a north-going Zax and a south-going Zax. And, you know, when I was looking it up, there's like three pictures that tell the whole story, and I really should have put them in a PowerPoint. Because there's a picture of two Zacks with little footprints crossing the Prairie of Prax, and they're headed straight for each other. Well, then there's a picture of them yelling at each other, which is pretty much what happens. They get face to face, and because neither one of them will move one step out of the way, they can't go anywhere. They're stuck. And then the last one, you know, there's like a couple of pages of them arguing, which does no good. And then they build a city around them and an overpass over them, and they're still standing there in the road, is like going over them. It's like everything goes on around them, you know. And yeah, you can spend a lot of time beating your head against the wall while the world will move on around you and everything else will go on. It's a great story. And you know, yeah, that last picture with an overpass and these two idiots just sitting there yelling at each other, you know, it's I mean, because unfortunately, I feel like I've probably been one of those idiots before. You know, I mean, there are times, you know, that it is very hard to manage conflict in the way that we should. But so I saw this. It must have been some article. I've just got the points here. It was three pieces of advice, like three steps for conflict resolution or managing conflict, and they're very scriptural concepts. And so I want to mention them and then talk about a few scriptures for each one, and just to kind of remind us what it is we need to be about as servants of God when it comes to managing conflict with others. One that I don't have here, but that always strikes me, is 1 Corinthians 6:7. Now, therefore, it is already an utter failure for you that you go to law against one another. Why do you not rather accept wrong? Why do you not rather let yourselves be cheated? No, you yourselves do wrong and cheat, and you do these things to your brethren. I mean, the idea that there are going to be times that in order to successfully manage conflict, we're going to have to just suck it up, the fact that we're being done wrong by, that's difficult. But, you know, that's kind of like the baseline that we're starting this whole conversation from, because, again, Christ has done that for us. So the first thing that the first piece of advice that in this particular thing was to think about yourself first. And that's hard to do, because when you're in a conflict, it's all about what the other person is doing wrong that has caused this conflict. You know, I'm walking north, minding my own business, when this south-going Zax just gets up in my face. And if he would just take a step to the side, I could continue to go north and everything would just be hunky-dory, right? And the fact that I won't take a step out of the way has nothing to do with this whole situation. In Proverbs, the 28th chapter and the 13th verse, and I invite you to turn along with me as we read these, please. It says, "He who covers his sins will not prosper, but whoever confesses and forsakes them will have mercy." You know, when we find ourselves in a situation that's a problem, we need to figure out what I am doing to contribute to this problem. And that is such a major life skill to have. It helps in so many ways. You can, conflicts a lot of times are like a thorn that gets stuck. You know, if you get a splinter, if when you get the splinter, you look at it and you're like, I got a splinter, and you go on and pull it out, within 5 minutes, you will never again remember that splinter ever existed in your life. But if you don't notice the splinter's there, or if you don't do anything about it, in a day or two, there's a pretty good chance it's going to start getting puffy and red, and you're going to have to break out the Neosporin, or you're going to end up with a trip to the doctor. So, again, conflict, when we're willing to say, what is it I can do to resolve this situation, if we're willing to do that, a lot of times you can move on and the conflict is gone and nobody will ever even remember that it happened. But when we refuse to yield, when we refuse to do what it takes to overcome this problem, then it just continues to grow and fester. And it says, "He who covers his sins will not prosper." When we refuse to accept the fact that we're at fault, whether it be toward our fellow man, but especially toward God, then we're not going to prosper. It's when we confess and forsake the things that we're doing wrong that we're going to have mercy and things are going to go right for us. In Galatians, the 6th chapter, Galatians 6 and verse 4, "But let each one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another, for each one shall bear his own load." I mean, we're all responsible for our own load. You know, our work is our own to do. Our work is our own to fix. And when we find ourselves in a situation where things aren't going well, again, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard this. I've heard, you know, the only person you can control is yourself. You can try to control other people, but a lot of times it's like, you know, wrestling jello. I mean, it just doesn't work out so well. But you can control yourself, and that is what God has given us. In 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, and verse 10, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad." You know, we're all going to have to answer for ourselves eventually. The trick is not to wait till that time to get things right. We understanding that every day we need to try to work things out. And again, part of that, while this verse doesn't specifically say, hey, you avoid conflict by looking at yourself first, it teaches us that we need to be thinking about the things as servants of God. What is it that I'm doing? What is my part in all this? Because when you worry about yourself first, a lot of these things will work themselves out. And then in Ezekiel 18 and verse 20, again, pretty familiar passage to us. The soul who sins shall die. The son shall not bear the guilt of the father, nor the father bear the guilt of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon himself, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon himself. You know, if someone else is acting wickedly, I can't force them to change that behavior. But what I can do is I can be righteous myself so that my righteousness is upon me, and hopefully that will influence them toward righteousness. But even if it doesn't, before God, I can be found righteous even if people are wicked around me. That's such a central concept to the Bible and to serving God, but it really, really applies, I believe, in conflict and managing conflict with other people. You know, when we're willing to yield, when we are peaceable, when we are willing to do the things that we're supposed to do, even in the face of other people that aren't doing the right thing, we're going to find ourselves in a lot less conflict. And, I get, because it's a very American concept of not being a doormat. And, I'm not suggesting that you go out and look for ways to find people to abuse you. But what I'm saying is that when you're always so worried about making sure that the ledger balances up just perfectly, that's when you run into a lot of these conflict problems, when you're not willing to overlook small things, when you're not willing to say, well, this person's having a bad day, or I don't understand what it is they're saying, and I'm taking it the wrong way, and now we have a conflict. And that's something that I've had problems with in the past. It's something I'm struggling with right now at work. I have a coworker who just doesn't express things the way I do, and I just kind of have to be quiet and let her kind of get everything out and wait till we, and then usually things will come around. But I have to be patient, and I have to, overcome my own willingness to blab and talk back. And it's difficult, and it's something that, it really strikes me, this is something you keep learning your whole life, And but again, I'm grateful to God for his teachings because they are so useful in so many places. And we see his wisdom shine through when we will do the things that he has told us to do. So again, think about yourself first when you have a conflict with somebody. What is it that I'm bringing to this conflict? What is it? And am I really justified in the way that I act? Even if my intentions are good, are my methods the best? Or could I change my methods in a way that maybe are a little less self-satisfying, but will be more productive in resolving the conflict? Because you don't have to give up you can stand for what's right and still, approach people with love and patience and mercy, just as God has done for us through Jesus Christ. I've got a note here, and I cannot remember the story, and I really wish I could. My notes say, story of coworker with kids in corner for an hour because they wouldn't figure out who did wrong. And I think what they did was, I must have had some coworker who had some kids, and they just said, go stand in the corner until you can tell me who did the wrong thing here. And an hour later, they were still in that corner because neither one of them would say, I did this wrong, in order to bring about reconciliation. Brethren, we've got to be a lot more honest with ourselves than that if we're going to be acceptable servants of God. We've got to be willing to look within ourselves and say, this is what I'm not doing right. This is what I can do to make it better. Because that's just the heart of it. But the next step is to be curious about the other person. Not to say, that other person is just wrong, but to say, what is it about this other person that's causing them to act in the way that they are? How can I show love and mercy toward this person? And, that is something that I have been able to successfully do sometimes in the past, and it's always worthwhile. If you can say, this person's acting this way because they've got this situation going on in their life, a lot of times if you'll show them that extra forbearance, it will just absolutely pay off in spades. And I'm not saying that's always the case, and whether or not it's the case, I think it's incumbent on us to always try to care for other people and to try to understand what their problems are so that we can help them, and especially in this in a situation where we find ourselves in conflict with them. In Romans 12:10, Paul writes, "Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor, giving preference to one another." You know, if I have a brother that I know is going through a tough time and they're not treating me in a particularly loving way, in honor, I need to give preference to them. I need to just say, you know what? They're having a problem right now. But I'm not going to know that if I'm not curious about the other person. If I don't take the time to find out what people are going through, I'm never going to know what it is. And, you know, I think that's kind of the crux of this. We can't treat each other with love until we know enough about the other person to know what it is that they need. And until we're willing to make that kind of investment in people, we can't really do the things that God has told us to do. You know, it's one thing to say, well, I always just treat people with love because I sit at home all the time and I don't ever talk to anyone. You know, that's not really what we're being instructed to do here. You know, it may be the easy way out, but, you know, I think there's a certain amount of engagement that's being called for here. And I say that as someone who needs to do a better job of it at times. But as we can find these things out and as we can account for these things, it makes a difference. Again, you know, there's certain, I think, prerequisites to some of this stuff. In John, the 13th chapter, just an absolutely beautiful context, but I'm not going to read it all. But in verse 34, he says, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." You know, was it a new commandment to love one another? No, I don't think it was. But as I have loved you, that was a new commandment because no one had ever loved them like Christ had loved them. That's a very high bar, brethren. And so if we love people the way Christ loved us, it's amazing how much conflict is going to just sort of fall by the wayside because, you know, that's a lot of love. And it's a lot of forbearance. And it's a lot of being willing to accept wrong. And it's a high bar, but it's what we're being called to do as God's people. In Philippians, the second chapter and verse 4. "Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others." You know, it's really easy to go through your day and say, "I've got a plan for today, and nobody better get in the way." And, you know, I've been guilty of that a lot. You know, because, and then you get very irritable the first time the first roadblock happens. It's like, "What? But this is not on the schedule today, guys." You know, and so, you know, there's other people that need things, and I have to be willing to put aside my priorities at times to worry about that. And, you know, the first people are my family, and sometimes it's hard to even do that, isn't it? Sometimes it's like, "Good grief, you need this? It's like, I'm trying to get this done." And, you know, again, that's not what Paul is instructing us here through this letter to the Philippians. He's saying, look out for the interests of others. Don't just be self-consumed with, "Well, this has got to happen because I want it to happen this way." No. You know, if we're willing to yield, again, we're going to have a lot less conflict. And then Ephesians, the fourth chapter in verse 32. "And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you." We're getting back to that loving other people as Christ has loved us. I mean, when we think about the great forgiveness we've gotten, we need to be willing to share that and to return that to other people. You know, we often pray, "Forgive us as we repent of our sins." But that's not the model prayer that Christ gave us. He said, "Forgive us our trespasses, even as we forgive those who trespass against us." That's the condition that Christ set forth that we need to be focused on, is that we need to be forgiving other people because, and when we go to God in prayer and we say, "God, will you forgive me?" We need to be able to say, "Because I have forgiven other people that have trespassed against me." And if we can't say that, then what right have we got to stand before God and say, "God, you need to forgive me"? And then finally, to apologize. You know, to be willing to apologize. In Matthew, the fifth chapter, and my time is hasting, so we're going to go through these last four verses. Matthew 5. Matthew 5. therefore, in verse 23, therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. You know, when it comes to worshiping God, don't we think like, boy, I got to worship God right now. That's the only thing that matters, you know. And he's saying, even if you're in the act of worshiping God and you realize there's something you need to make right with your brother, you go take care of that. Because that's what God is interested in. He wants you to be right before him by being right with those around you. In James, the fifth chapter, in verse 16. Confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. You know, you may say, well, Kevin, you're talking about confession there. Well, you can't really have a confession without an apology if you're really confessing. I mean, otherwise you're bragging. I mean, if you're telling people you're sinning and there's not an apology involved in that, then you're bragging about, well, look what a great sinner I am. I'm really good at sinning. If you're confessing your sin, you're saying, I'm sorry that I have done this. And there's got to be that regret if we're going to be acceptable to God. Because until we have regret, we're not going to have change. And change is what God is interested in seeing from us when we're not doing what he wants us to do. In Luke, the 17th chapter in verse 3, take heed to yourselves. If your brother sins against you, rebuke him. And if he repents, forgive him. And if he sins against you seven times in a day and seven times in a day returns to you saying, I repent, you shall forgive him. So, you know, we have to be on both sides. We have to be willing to apologize and we have to be willing to forgive. And then the last verse that I want to look at real briefly is Luke 15, 21. It's in the middle of the parable of the prodigal son. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. We're going to go on and read the next few verses. But the father said to his servants, bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they began to be merry. You know, we read these, I don't know, it's like, this just seems distant, doesn't it? It's hard sometimes to take these parables and put them in perspective. But you ask yourself, if your own child did this to you, if they took half the money that you had, and they went off and acted in ways that you just found absolutely repugnant, and then they came back home, would you have the reaction that this father did? And that's what God has done for us. Even more so, he sent his brother after him. I mean, God really sent his brother to die for all of us. Our brother to die for all of us so that we could have the ability to say this to him. And, you know, it's just, it's striking. And so this morning, if you got to manage conflict, the first conflict you have to manage is with God. And the only reason that there's a conflict with God is because all of us find ourselves doing things that are not what he wants us to do. And we need to, if you're here this morning, you haven't made that right, you need to. If you need to be baptized, you can do that. If you've been living like you shouldn't and you want to confess that, you can do that too. And, you know, once you've made that right, then you need to look around you and say, am I living with my fellow man the way that God would want me to do, the way that he has shown me how to do, the way he has instructed me through his word? If there's anything we can do for you this morning, please make it known as we stand together and sing.